Curtain up, theater people. Welcome to Your Program Is Your Ticket. My name is Sean Chandler, and I'll be your host. Your Program Is Your Ticket is a discussion of smaller theater works and the people and organizations that make it happen. As many of you know, Your Program Is Your Ticket is a helpful system where your program is literally your ticket to get into the theater in smaller, more intimate productions. It's these works we like to highlight, and that's our goal on this show, to feature as many of these productions as possible while still discussing the biggies. My guests on tonight's show are actor-producers Odelia Avati and Jennifer Peach, actor William Humans and director Don Stevenson from the upcoming New York premiere of playwright Vincent Delaney's The War Party, featured in the 2018 New York International Fringe Festival and running from Sunday, October 14th to Tuesday, October 23rd at various times. Here's a synopsis taken directly from the War Party website. It's 3 a.m. on election night. Campaign headquarters is outfitted for a huge celebration. Streamers, posters, champagne. But the room is dead quiet. Laura Smith, the Republican incumbent and supposed favorite, lost her Senate race in a landslide. Suddenly without friends and drunk as a skunk, Laura is thinking of cashing it all in. That is, until one of her loyal and spunky interns, Jesse, rescues her from the brink of disaster and wrestles her, quite literally, back to political life. A timely and provocative satire where two women engage in a charged cat-and-mouse game, complete with food fights, endless drinking, and girls kissing, with the uninvited ghost of FDR. The War Party is a modern political parable about our broken two-party system. Sounds like a hilariously topical political roller coaster ride, and I can't wait to discuss it. So let's bring them on. Hi, gang, and welcome to Your Program Is Your Ticket.
Hey!
Hi. Nice to be here.
Hey.
Just so our audience can familiarize your voice, let's have you introduce yourselves and, once again, tell us your position within the production. How about we start with you?
Hi, my name is Odelia Avati. I play Jesse, and I am a producer on this play as well.
Excellent.
Hi, I'm Jennifer Peach. I am playing Laura Smith, and I am also a producer.
Don Stevenson, I'm directing the play.
I'm Bill Humans. I play Franklin Delano Roosevelt, or his ghost.
I love that. I'm really, really intrigued by that whole element of it. I think that's going to... seems really cool to me. It's very mysterious. What drew you all to the War Party?
Actually, Odelia found it a couple of years ago now in a scene study class, and she just loved the material, and she and I have been in a class together for years now, really. And one day she said, oh, I have this play, I've been looking for somebody, and you're the right age, and do you want to do it? And so we threw up a scene from it, and everybody in class, the response was so great that they said, oh, you guys should do the whole thing, you should put it up somewhere. And so that kind of started, the idea started gestating, because we loved the characters, we loved the piece and what it said, and that's where it started.
Yeah.
How long has the play been around?
I don't know. I think, well, at least...
Well, Vince wrote it in response to a senatorial race out where he's from, which he's from the Seattle, Washington area. And it did have two other incarnations, one in Philadelphia and one in Seattle in 2008. So it's been quite a while. We all did a developmental reading of it in January of 2018 with Up Theater Company, which is an uptown theater company, and based on the feedback from that reading, Vince has rewritten it twice for us, so this is the newer, improved version of the script.
So it's had two readings at this point?
It's had one reading since we got it. It had two different productions in 2008,
all right.
And it was really in response to what was happening in politics at that time. But interestingly, it feels even more relevant now with the crazy political landscape that we see every day, turning on the news and stuff. It just feels even more
relevant.
Yeah, just so right for right now. We need to hear this right now.
Excellent.
I like the fact that it's based on, inspired at least, or based on a true story, Republican congresswoman named Linda Smith ran this really, really tough race against the Democratic candidate. I think her name was Patty Murray, and this is in Washington State in 1998. So that race, that bitter, bitter race, which Linda Smith lost, was the inspiration for the play. And, you know, when Peach sent it to me, I immediately liked it. I mean, it has its politics, and it's sort of unfolds like a thriller, a little bit like a mystery. It's funny, and it also has a lot of pathos to it. And I think, ultimately, it's patriotic, which in today's day and age, you know, all you got to do is turn the news on. In this political climate that we live in, it really, as she says, it has a lot to say, I think. And it just didn't do one thing, you know. Like I said, it was funny, it was serious. But in the end, it made me feel patriotic and hopeful, I think. So I liked it right away. And, you know, I read a lot of stuff, and good writing sort of can jump out at you, you know. And when you have good writing with good actors, hopefully you have a good show by the end. That's the idea, anyway. With mediocre directing, great actors, and great writing, you can have a good show.
He's being humble, isn't he?
No.
Totally.
No.
Well, I do know that I've had my play at the Flash in Fringe, and it's an adjudicated system. I mean, I think that there's something like 1,000 shows that are entered, 900 to 1,000, and they pick around 200.
It's a lot less this year.
Is it?
Yeah, this is a new start for Fringe. First, it used to be in the summer, and now it's in the autumn. And they scaled it down quite a bit. I think they're...
Is that 80 something, I think, is what they said. Yeah.
Well, they said they were going to submit it, and I was like, yeah, sure. I mean, I didn't have any real expectations that it would get in. Did you guys? I mean, when you called me and were like, they're doing it, I was like, what? You know, so I was happy but surprised, because, you know, the odds are when you have that few are against you.
Oh, sure.
You know,
absolutely.
Just the way it works.
Can I ask... you said the play had two prior productions. Where were they? What
one
theaters?
One was in Seattle and one was in Philadelphia.
Two small theater companies in 2008 in those two different cities. So it's never... This is the New York premiere.
This is the New York premiere.
And he has rewritten it.
And he's rewritten it.
He changed a lot, because he was here in January when we did our little staged reading. And
right.
I think based on that and what he saw, the audience's reaction, and what all of us sort of said, he went off and filled with it, you know. Updated it and sharpened it, I guess.
Yeah.
Now, did he do that with an eye towards the politics of today?
Absolutely.
Okay.
Yeah.
How so?
Well, I think when he first wrote it, it was Hillary...
was just the wife.
Yeah.
I mean, and Sarah Palin had just gone rogue, you know, on John McCain.
So it was, you know,
sure,
many years ago. So it had a different kind of slant to it. So certainly... none of the stuff with Trump being elected, Hillary losing the election, none of that had happened when he first wrote it. So
okay,
obviously reflecting all of that and everything that's happened since, I think he wanted to do that,
mm-hmm,
make it more current.
And do rewrites continue day to day? Because I wrote a piece of theater, it was a musical that premiered in Chicago earlier, about the election, and it felt like every single day we had to change it. We had to write a new song, or we had to write a new scene, or it was constantly being updated. Is that something that your show is going through?
Not huge, but I mean, a few lines here and there. I've emailed him or spoken to him on the phone and said, can we change this word? Can we change this line? This makes more sense. Can we change this character's name? Somebody that they talk about, you know? And he's been, sure. I mean, he's been cool with all of it. But I would say nothing huge, nothing earth-shattering where we're changing, you know.
And maybe if he was in the room with us in rehearsal, we might have more of that. But he's in Seattle. He will be flying in for our opening. But we're not having him on a daily basis while we're working. So.
I see. Talk about the relationship between the two ladies in the show.
Do you want to?
Go ahead.
So... What we love is these are just fierce, smart, dynamic women who, at least my character, I feel like, is broken in some way that gets revealed through the course of the show. And in the end, it's a pretty complicated relationship. It's a bit of cat and mouse as we get to know each other. Like, are you positioning? Are you, what is your game here? And then pushing and kind of pushing and pulling.
I mean, what I've always liked is that it's a story. I mean, politics is a big thing. It's a big, you know, it's like the vehicle that's pushing it. But really the story in my mind was always about just two human beings, and it's okay if they're differing or if they're, you know, completely completely not on the same political page or whatever, but the humanity just brings them together, hope and I don't know, and just the human thing. There's a human connection that I think you see it in times of like emergencies or just natural disasters, or you know, you just forget the things that divide us and you come together. And that's what I saw in the play that I really liked. And politics is the backdrop for that, and the you know, the setting. But at the core, I feel like it's just two human beings connecting, finding the way to connect, deciding to connect.
Well, from what I've read, it sounds like the politician in the piece, she's lost her race, and so she's kind of at bottom, if not pretty close. So she's vulnerable at that time, and is probably more open to receiving grace from another human being. Is that occurring in the show? Am I getting that right? I mean, I'm going off of description here, but
well, definitely rock bottom. I mean, lost the race, but also the marriage that has crumbled.
Wow.
A child that is no longer with us, and that gets revealed through the course. So definitely rock bottom, but a bit of a bulldog of a person, railing against it, and you know, and so this young woman kind of wrestle me back to life and gives me something that I needed to move forward and look forward into the future, like a new lease on life.
Oh, that's a way farther bottom than I had described. That's a lot of loss. And how does FDR come into play in this show?
Carefully, quickly, with blue light and smoke.
FDR appears as a ghost or as some sort of near-death experience type of vision, deathbed vision, which people often report. He is trying to convince her to, Jen's character, that is, to come with him to a better place, a special, lovely, private place where the two of them can frolic without the cares of political careers and the problems that we associate with the temporal world. And he's left his political leanings and all that far behind him. He cares nothing for that. All he wants is companionship. And he has decided that she's the one. And of course, on a certain level, he's a figure of her subconscious, right? Her subconscious has cooked him up as a sort of ironic, almost joke at herself, because he is so far to the left of where she is. And she says, how can it be you? Go get Nixon, bring him, you know? He's more my type.
I was going to say, yeah. But
it's sort of like some kind of cosmic joke on her that the person who appears to her as she's about to depart this world is like the icon of the left. So, and he's aware of that, and he kind of is humorously uses that to kind of coax her to come with him. And we play him as he was in life, in a wheelchair primarily, and the victim of his illness, polio.
Sure.
And, He speaks like the way, at least the way I'm doing it. I'm trying to speak the way they used to and the way he did, with perfectly good American speech. You know, the standard American speech.
That's
pretty
good.
Atlantic speech.
Atlantic, the standard
yes.
American of Edith Skinner from Carnegie Tech.
Good.
And, and you know, back then in those days, my voice teacher has pointed this out. The way we use our voice now is different because of microphones. Microphones and just our culture. People basically, you know, they talk like this. And then, back then, people spoke like this. And when you had to do oratory, there wasn't so much of a microphone. You know, even if there was a microphone, it wasn't very good. And you had to speak, you know, so you use your voice in a different way. So I'm trying to experiment with doing that a little bit.
And in the show, it's crazy. Like, you don't know what's going on. Is she hallucinating? You know, is it real? How could it be real? He's suddenly there. Mm-hmm. And so you don't know what's happening, which is the great thing about it. You don't know if it's real or if it isn't.
And of all people in her time of need, why that person? But he, at one point in the script, does articulate, yes, it's me, and here's what we have in common. This is why it's me. You know?
Yes, right. It turns out they do have a great deal in common. And I think that you could almost say that the show is about that on a certain level,
mm-hmm.
about the things that people
yeah.
have in common, even when they're far, far apart on the ideological spectrum.
Which is probably nice to see and hear in the politically divisive climate that we live in and experience every single
exactly.
day, moment to moment. So that's edifying in itself. That's really nice to hear. Now, how are rehearsals going? How are you doing putting all of these elements together and bringing them into a cohesive piece?
I'd say it's disastrous, wouldn't you?
Oh,
I don't know what else you would call it.
Got a flop sweat.
Yes, really.
Well,
we spent a half an hour first with yoga, and then we do theater games, exercises, everyone has an animal, and then they chase each other around, and I look at my phone while they're doing that. I don't really pay attention. No, it's good. I mean, look, they're fantastic, massive parts, especially for the two women. She never leaves the stage from the beginning of the show to the end. She barely does, and he comes on and sort of has to do this tour de force backflip, you know, playing someone that's so iconic and that we all know. So, you know, it requires a massive amount. Obviously, there's a million lines for everyone to learn.
Sure.
Because it's just the three of them. And the emotions that are evoked and the things that they have to play through are big. And complicated, as we've said, and emotional. So, you know, they have to be technically proficient and also emotionally able to go to all of the dark places and the funny places that the play goes to. So it's a demanding show for the three actors that do it. And, I mean, they're doing great. We're rehearsing and...
at our first kind of runs.
We sort of ran through it
one
and a half times today. And it's great. Like I said, when you have great actors and great writing, I mean, where else would you want to be, you know? I mean, that's the ball game. And we were saying it's so much fun to work on something that's good and that you can be good with, you know? Then it's just, it's working that muscle that actors want to work and directors want to work and playwrights want to work.
I was watching the first part of the rehearsal and I was reminded of Malkovich and Sinise in True West. You know, the way they were tearing up the scenery and they have a kind of antagonistic but love relationship. And it's funny but also kind of gripping at the same time. It was really,
nice.
I must say, it's really good. But it's like a female, that part of it was like a female True West almost. I thought it was really exciting.
Well, the metaphor I tell the ladies is it's Rocky Balboa and Apollo Creed, you know, in the ring together. and all that that brings and all the fun that that brings, because this really is sort of like a boxing match for 90 minutes, you know.
So 12, 15 minutes of stretching and theater games,
yeah.
And the rest of the time it's...
then we
it's,
do push-ups.
Push-ups, and then, right. And then
crunches, planks.
Little shadow boxing.
All of that stuff. To build the stamina needed for the 15 rounds of boxing that the play is.
I had to ask Don about these curse words that I have to say, because I didn't know one. No, I'm just kidding.
Yeah,
I curse a lot in this show.
It's really
fun.
It's a profane play.
You can say some of the curse words, just so you know. I have an explicit.
Well, when
rating.
She's when they say I might cover my ears and I la 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 because
the FCC hasn't regulated.
The FCC hasn't well, yet.
You'll just have to come, Sean.
No, I actually have a little E next to my podcast that says it's explicit.
Explicit.
So. Yes, that's one of the things that you have to do. If you curse, then you must have the E. Tell us about your playwright, Vincent Delaney. What's he like?
He's really wonderful.
He's about 6'2". He's handsome.
Family man.
He's a handsome devil.
He looks exactly like George Clooney. Really?
Yes.
Good. He's going to be at every performance signing autographs and stuff.
Good kisser.
Yeah.
What else do we know about him?
He is extremely collaborative and was very, very open. He loved re-examining this play again because he kind of put it to bed, I think, after his 2008 productions back then, and so we kind of hit him up and he was excited by that and so open to discussing everything having to do with it. So
yeah,
very collaborative. Very cool. And wonderful.
It was good because, like, you know, when he and I first talked about it, you know, we hadn't talked really at all beforehand, and it was reassuring to see that we were saying the same thing, you know. This is this beat, this is that beat. And I was like, yes. And he's like, yes. I was like, all right. So it'll be okay because we agree. You being a playwright, you know, if you don't agree early on, it's not going to go smoothly in rehearsal, you know. And so that's just a symbiotic kind of thing. People have the same sensibilities, right? And I think that's also a testament to the writing. It is this, you know, and we all agree this section, this chunk of the show is like this, you know, and then I guess the goal is to do it that way.
Sounds like you have a great cohesive team. That's terrific. Let's talk a little bit about the other people that are on your team, your creative team, lighting designer, set designer, costume designer. Tell me about those people.
Well, they're all a bunch of Broadway geniuses.
Yeah, I sent the script to everybody asking them, we would love for you to be a part of this. This is a fringe show, so we're going to be very limited. Would you like it? And everybody said, well, I want to read it. So, but they read it. Everybody that read it said, yes, I want to be a part of it. Even though, you know, you get paid a nickel, and it's going to be a lot of
work
in a very, very limited.
You told me it was...
You get 2 cents for you.
That's what I thought.
So the response was great, and I know, like, our costume designer, she had an opportunity to do something else, and she chose our little fringe show.
It was actually
because
Sondheim
she responded to it.
Yeah,
he literally said, "Sondheim, forget him."
No.
Who? So I thought that was a great sign.
It was
that they really responded
it?
To
yeah.
the material. Yeah.
They all like it. They all wanted to do it, you know. I mean, when you read it, it's like it's a good read, and like it's something inspirational about it, and like I said earlier, patriotic,
mm-hmm.
you know, which isn't something that happens a lot nowadays in our current political system. You know, that feeling of real patriotism—that's the main thing that I got out of it in the end. You know, it was like, yes, yes, we can. You know, we can do something. We don't know what, we don't know how, but we'll try, you know, try to do it. That's really the ball game, isn't it? Just
absolutely.
To try to do something. You probably will fail. It's obvious, you know, bitter and political rivalries, but to try to come together and to do something for the greater good is really ultimately what it's about. And it rings clear, you know, just like a bell, like the Liberty Bell. The play does that. It makes you want to go out and give it a go, you know, and not huddle under the covers and give up.
Right.
Which some days that seems like the best thing to do.
Right. Sometimes two and three times a day.
Indeed, sure.
How's your experience with the New York International Fringe Festival going? I know it can be very, very fast-paced.
Very fast, and they like there to be one point man associating with them, and so we have somebody on our production team that is that man, so it's not us. So he would better answer that question, but I think he's finding the experience great. You know, would we have liked to know more things sooner? Yes, we would. Anybody would that's in production. But we haven't even seen the venue yet. We both go and see the venue Thursday evening for the first time because we're loading in the wheelchair, FDR's wheelchair, and a little couch we use in the show. So we just can't wait. We've seen pictures, but we haven't seen anything.
Having restrictions can sometimes make you more creative.
I agree.
You know what I mean? So, sure, could we do it with $13 million? Well, yeah, sure. But can we do it with $3? You know, that's the thing. And so... not knowing where the space, not knowing exactly what we would have, you know, made me come at it in a very sort of contained way that I knew that I could put this in a box and I could take it anywhere and still do the show that I wanted to do and that I thought it was, you know, regardless of the space and regardless of what I had. Light-wise or sound-wise or anything-wise, you know, because I didn't know what that would be, so I sort of planned for the worst or the least that I would have, and then anything else is gravy, right? Then you're like, yo, great! I can have that? Sure, I'll put it in. But I really tried to make it like a show in a box I could take anywhere and pop it open. If I had to do it in the round, if I had to do it in the thrust, if I had to do it on a proscenium, you know, regardless, I could do it.
Oh, yeah. What people don't necessarily realize, a lot of people do that are in the New York theater community who have experienced Fringe, is that you're in a theater with 10, 15,
yeah.
20 other shows
right.
going on at the same time, and your schedule is over a week or two at odd times. And you're sharing props. You have one light grid that everyone has to acclimate themselves
right.
to. You can't have your lighting designer go in and start moving lights around. They just have to work with what they have.
Right.
And I totally agree with you, Dawn. I think, and I've said this before on my show, when we're forced to not rely so much on money and resources, and we have to use our imagination, sometimes I think that's when genius moments really start to happen. I've seen it done in theater myself, where I'm like, I could tell that came out of somebody's mind and not somebody's wallet. And I think I'm really glad that you said that.
I think that's true, you know, and the great thing about the theater is that hopefully the audience uses their imagination to fill in what isn't there.
Sure.
Right? I mean, we can all go to a movie and they can CGI it and do it all, you know, and that's great. I love all of that. But the theater, you know, the audience's part or participation is filling in what might not actually be there. And this show, and I think a lot of shows lend themselves to that, you know. I have this theory, too, that, you know, because people do so many workshops and so many readings and musicals and plays and everything, actors have gotten really, really good, and I guess directors too, at choreographers, of making things come to life in a room without any of the other stuff, because they're doing it to try to get the money, they're doing it to try to get the theater, and so the magic has to be created, at least for the people that are coming to see it, without all of the stuff,
right.
You know? And so actors have gotten really good at, you know, when they come on making it, it's almost as if there is a lighting cue that comes with them. You know, and you and I have talked a lot about that, you know, some of the final run-throughs of shows in a rehearsal space are often the most magical. I mean, you could speak to that. We've talked about that.
Yeah.
Where it's never as good. You go to the theater and you add all the stuff, and it doesn't quite have that same something that you had in the room with the crate and the table, you know, and the broom.
Right. And I've read all of your resumes. And
mine's padded.
Even if it's padded, right. even if only 50% of it is, right? It's, I mean, you all have such esteemed careers. So you've worked with the big wigs, and you've worked on the big shows. And for you to have that perspective is so wonderful, and so wonderful to hear, especially for people who are just starting out in the business, who maybe might get a little, I don't want to say disappointed, but downtrodden on their progress and what they're sometimes asked to do. When you're saying something like that, that gives them hope, and it teaches them, hey, look, use your imagination, and some of the most wonderful things could occur on that stage. So I really do thank you for saying that. That's,
well, when you look at, like, in Rome, I was just in Italy over the summer, and went one of those Roman amphitheaters, you know, or Greece, or even in the Shakespeare's Club, they don't have all that stuff. They're doing it in the daylight, you know, they don't have all this flying and all this stuff, and somehow the audience is still taken away and transported. And so I think that our little play here with these three actors and this subject matter can do that.
Sure.
Regardless of where we are and the technical stuff that we have, you know. If basically, it's sitting around a campfire telling stories, right? So if you go back to that, that's the essence of the whole thing. Everything else is just frou-frou and money, right?
Oh, absolutely. Reminds me of in the movie Shakespeare in Love. I've only seen it once. I saw it a long time ago. But they're doing the death scene, and I believe Gwyneth Paltrow, when she dies, she, like, throws out a red scarf,
yeah,
or something indicating blood, and the entire audience,
yeah,
in the Globe Theater is just gasped. Oh, my God. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, I mean, if it's there in mood, if it's there in performance, if it's there in writing and direction, then you absolutely, it can be magical, and it can be absolutely edifying and wonderful and beautiful, a great experience. Okay, I was just going to ask before we go if one of you can share your social media information about the show, where you can learn about the show, the cast, the creative, and also to purchase tickets.
Sure. Well, we have created a website just for the show. It's called thewarpartyplay.com. And it has clickable links, so you can purchase. It shows you our fringe dates, and you can click right over to the fringe. All ticket processing goes through their website, but you can get to it from our website after you read about it.
Terrific. Excellent. So they can. That's a one-stop shop.
Yeah.
Okay, that's great. Now, just so everyone who's listening knows, Fringe does have off times with most of its productions, because there are productions going in one right after the other. I believe you are Sunday the 14th at 4:30, Monday the 15th at 7:30, Wednesday the 17th at 9:30 p.m., Sunday the 21st, 9:45, and then Tuesday the 23rd at 7:30.
Yes.
So everyone, please, when you go and you're purchasing your tickets, please make sure that you have an awareness of that, that that's how it works. It's not like a regular theater schedule, and most people who go to Fringe know that, but, you know, I just like to point that out. Now, would any of you like to talk about any future projects you're working on, or give your own social media information? Anything that's coming up?
I'll give mine.
Okay, cool.
I am Jennifer Peach Passbjerg, that's my married name, on Facebook, and then on Twitter, I am at Jennifer Peach, P-I-E-C-H. Sounds like the fruit, spelled differently.
Excellent. How about the two of you? No? Nothing.
Odelia is off the grid.
That's I so wish I could do that.
Yeah,
we can't even find her. We don't know where she is.
I can't.
We are thrilled to be in a room.
Send out a carrier pigeons to give her the call time.
Smoke signals,
yeah.
Right?
And she comes if she sees it.
How about you, Don? Are you on the grid, or is there anything?
I sort of on the grid, but I don't really know how to do any of it. And I'm impressed with your microphone and your computer and your whole setup here.
Oh, thank you very much.
I didn't know how to even plug any of that in. So I do have a website but I don't know the name of it. I think it's myname.com or something. That's easy. Just go find it.
Don is a brilliant actor too. I don't
know
if you know this.
That's for sure.
Mr. Don Stevenson
does
it all.
That's it.
So we're so lucky to be in a room with him.
Yes.
Yeah.
And you know, she and Billy and I have known each other for almost 20 years because we were all in Titanic together. So we have a long, long history. And Odelia, I don't remember you were in that or not. I don't think you were.
That's
right. She's much too young. But I would say that, I mean, speaking for myself, I think it does give at least the three of us a certain sort of comfort with each other, you know, just because we have known each other for so long. And that was a good group of people, and it was a bonding experience. So even when we don't see each other for a while, when we do, it's sort of like no time has gone by. You know, you have friends like that. So I certainly feel that way about them. And it just sort of lets us all just jump in and just do it without any other thought about it, you know? And I really feel that way about all the people in that cast, but certainly these two. So, you know, it just makes it easy and we just get right to it and laugh and have fun as we go. Otherwise, why do it? It's like a real job.
But even, you know, not having been in Titanic or having been in Finn, they're all, it's really been wonderful. Well, Jen and I are in class and we sometimes go off in like whole conversations in like funky accents and just try to like one up each other with different accents. She can do every single accent in the world.
Girl,
listen,
stop it.
And Don has really been wonderful. I told Jen, I don't think I've told you directly, but I'm really enjoying the rehearsal process and just the way you describe things and the way you like get the picture across and the point across and the it's really been really enjoyable and Billy's also great, so it's really a fun room to rehearse.
My direction is vivid, if nothing else.
Yes.
It may be confusing, but it's vivid. So
it's very entertaining.
We laugh a lot.
I can tell. I'm laughing. I've known you for less than an hour. And
you got to come. You got to come see the show.
I will. Absolutely.
They're really good. You'll like it.
I know I will.
You may go run for office after. Give up this theater life and go and do something, you know.
They won't have me in office. they don't want me in any kind
too many
of political
skeletons
office.
In the
exactly. Indeed, I will.
Although that doesn't matter anymore. You can just, whatever. Just do it. Right?
They can have it.
Yeah, really.
I'll stick to this difficult
stick
business.
To show
business. Exactly. Well, you've all been great. And thank you so much.
Thank you so much. Thanks for having us. Thank you.
Thank you for being with us. Actor producers Odelia Avadi and Jennifer Peach, actor William Humans, and director Don Stevenson from the upcoming New York premiere of playwright Vincent Delaney's The War Party, running as part of the 2018 New York International Fringe Festival. The New York International Fringe Festival is a wonderful opportunity to see some of the best and brightest up-and-coming theater. You can learn all about the festival and buy tickets to all the shows at FringeNYC.org. That's FringeNYC.org. But make it your priority to buy tickets to the War Party first. Well, folks, the proverbial 11 o'clock number has been sung and the bows have been taken, so it's time to lower the curtain. You can find more episodes of Your Program Is Your Ticket at Facebook.com, Your Program Is Your Ticket. I'm on Twitter at Program Ticket. The website is yourprogramisyourticket.com. How convenient is that? Also, please visit my YouTube page and subscribe. I've got some backstage interviews there and some other fun videos. Quick thanks to North Coast NYC, the hip-hop improv theater ensemble that does my intro and outro music. You might be hearing it right now. If not, you'll hear it very, very soon. Your Program Is Your Ticket is on iTunes and SoundCloud. Rate me, write me a review, subscribe. Please do all that. It helps with my profile. Folks, take a little time to see a show this week, and don't forget to give a smaller show some love. There's lots of theater gems out there. Until our next show, good night, theater people, and
Kurt. Your program is your ticket. Your program is your ticket.